Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Connection, a weekly radio program where we share our experiences and expertise with stories of caring, courage, and change right here in Connecticut. Listen to learn about needed resources to improve your well-being and transform your life. Now, here are the hosts of The Connection, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore and Anne Baldwin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome again to this week's program. And I am pleased to be here today with my co-host, Lisa DeMattis-Lepore, also the Chief Executive Officer at The Connection. Happy day.
Happy day. Happy Sunday. It's great to see you.
It is.
Welcome to our listeners. Hope you're enjoying your Sunday morning.
Yeah, absolutely right. And we're so excited because we look like we could be NASCAR announcers, don't we?
That may be a great, we'll have to talk to Joey Logano about that.
Yeah, you think he'd let us? No, we're loose cannons, man.
We would get him in trouble.
Yeah, so we have these the microphone is now attached to the headset. So it's like not good for the hair, but it's good for the show. So we're going to take one for the show today.
We're going to take one for the show.
Right.
All right.
Absolutely.
There's always hairspray. We're good.
There is. And, we've just been covering so many different topics from, recovery, from criminal justice to behavioral health. And one of the things that we want to really focus in on today, Lisa, is, the behavioral health services that are offered by The Connection. And it's great to have Teresa Ferraro, who's the program director of the residential program at The Connection, with us today. Teresa, thank you for being on the program.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Welcome, Teresa. It's great to have you. For our listeners out there, Teresa has been working at our organization for an extremely long time. And recently I went to a client awards dinner, and Teresa was there with her staff. And, many of the clients that Teresa works with have, severe mental health issues. And to see the way that Teresa and her staff really have made these incredible connections with our clients and how well respected they are, but mostly important, how far the clients have really come that have these severe mental disorders. So, Teresa, I just want to say out to all of our listeners how grateful I am to have you as a very valued team member at The Connection. So thank you.
So, Teresa, why don't you explain some of the programs that you provide when it comes to perhaps housing, psychosocial rehabilitation, all those kinds of things. Talk a little bit about how that works.
So we have some really wonderful and dynamic programs in the New Haven area. Our three primary residential programs, Park Street Inn, Park Street Residence, and Cornerstone, serve people with severe mental illness. A lot of these individuals have responded really poorly to our so-called traditional treatment for individuals with these diagnoses. And they've been identified and they've been referred to The Connection for really more support in the community and more support to be able to stabilize, learn coping skills, manage their symptoms. These individuals have been identified as people who really don't need to live in hospital settings, but really need some more enhanced supports in the community, really not ready to go right out into their own apartment. So they come to our programs, they receive 24-hour, 7-day-a-week support services from staff. We do skill-building groups, we do medication management, we do coping skills, we do regular activities of daily living, such as cooking, cleaning, etc., to really help these folks establish these skills and get them ready to move on to the next step, but, a lower level of care, a more independent setting for them, because they really have the ability, they just need to take the time to work with us to kind of strengthen those skills.
You know, I want to ask you to back up a little bit because you talked about maybe traditional treatments didn't work.
Right.
What are some of the traditional treatments that are being applied out there? Is it meds? What is it?
So a traditional treatment track for someone with severe mental illness could possibly start with an inpatient hospitalization. Sometimes that happens for 30 days, sometimes that goes for 3 months, and then typically that person would transition either back out into the community, maybe with their family, and then they would engage in outpatient services, intensive outpatient, and maybe get some case management. And that traditional treatment is still really wonderful, and it still helps a lot of people, but there's also a significant piece of the population, and these are the folks that I'm talking about who access our residential services. So for that piece of the population, those services really are not enough.
Well, and let me ask you, Lisa, because you know, what happens to these folks if they don't have a place or a program like the Connection offers? Where do they go? Where do they end up?
Often they end up hospitalized in an inpatient setting, which obviously that's very expensive, not necessarily the best track for some folks. They could end up potentially homeless because they are so difficult to treat. So they really, and that's not a place for these folks to go either. I mean, that's really not rehabilitation. So I think that there's such a lack of treatment for this population that, you know, I know that we don't have any empty beds, that's for sure, because the need is high. But again, they need such intensive oversight. And as Teresa said, they do have many skills. I have to say, Teresa, that, you know, one client in particular that's had a very long history of serious mental health is an amazing photographer. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea that he was one of our clients. And he was taking pictures and, you know, the way he was conducting himself, and he takes gorgeous photos. And this guy has a pretty extensive history. But so the point I'm trying to say is that, you know, someone like that could have gotten lost, would have gotten lost, may not be alive. You know, that's dangerous for them to be on the street. They can't live in a quote-unquote normal housing. They have to get stabilized. So it definitely wouldn't be a good outcome. That's for sure. Do you agree with me, Teresa?
I do agree, Lisa, and I think you bring up a really good point, is that, you know, the individuals who are accessing our services don't always have a history of instability. Sometimes they do, but like with this gentleman that you're speaking about, Lisa, who has this incredible talent and is an incredible artist, his illness unfortunately affected him in a way that he wasn't able to manage it independently. He went off of his meds, he became increasingly symptomatic. And so to your point, Lisa, these individuals come to us from very diverse education backgrounds. Some of them are very highly educated, and some of them were at one point in time living a typical life, going to work every day, having a family.
Exactly.
And at some point their illness became just so unmanageable that they needed to access hospital services, and still it was identified that, as I was saying before, the traditional treatment just wasn't enough for them, and they needed a program like this, like the ones that the Connection operates, to really help them restabilize. So we've got folks with incredible, incredible potential, and we're working with them every day to support them in reaching that potential and reintegrating back into the community.
You know, Teresa, as I mentioned earlier when the show started, I think back to the ceremony that I was so privileged to attend with your staff and your clients, and everyone received an award for all these different, you know, achievements. And it could have been the smallest thing to the largest, but here's the reality. Every little step of, you know, being bright and happy, you know, and so now we're giving award to, example, Susie Smith, because every day she's, you know, on time, and she's always happy and positive, and she, you know, is friendly to other people, and she does, you know, et cetera, et cetera, to, you know, someone really, you know, something large, for an achievement for each person. And everyone felt so valued and noted for, you know, who they are and, you know, their achievements. And again, I think I was so touched by that, Teresa, I have to say. I mean, that really made my day. That's really the reason why, you know I come to work every day, is to see the work that you're doing and your staff are doing for our clients. So can't thank you enough.
And if you're just tuning in, we're talking with Teresa Ferraro. She's the Program Director of Residential and Behavioral Health Services at The Connection. And, of course, myself, Ann Baldwin, and Lisa DeMattis-Lapore. You know, you brought up a good point in that you know, I guess like anything, right? Whether it's addiction, you know, in my case, alcoholism, you know, it took me down later in life, you know, mm-hmm. in my 50s. I was pretty good up until that point, but all of a sudden there was a trigger and something went down and went down bad. So these types of things can hit anybody at, you know, any point in their life. You know, I don't know that we know exactly why. It could be a chemical imbalance. It could be a traumatic event. It can be so many different, there could be so many different factors. So I've got a friend, for example, who's got a sister who's in her late 50s, who had a car and a job and was, you know, very successful. And then all of a sudden something happened. And now this woman is just a totally different person. And it's mental illness. Mm-hmm. So you just never know, like anything else, when it's going to hit and when you might need, you know, services or assistance. And people don't necessarily understand mental illness, do they, Teresa?
No, and I would say that that's a big challenge and one of the biggest barriers that we try to work with every day to, you know, support the community and bring awareness to the community of just what you're saying, and that mental illness, it exists and it lives and it breathes on a continuum. And, you know, you, like many of our clients and like you've identified, you could be managing your symptoms very well for an extended period of time, and then one traumatic event or one trigger can set you off course. And that's the nature, that's kind of the fundamental nature of the illness, is that when we're talking about a chronic extended problem, the symptoms kind of go up and down, and some days they're more manageable than others. But we have to be aware, and this is, again, what we do as professionals in the community, we have to be aware and we have to bring that awareness to our collaborators and our other providers to really have them understand, and it's really helpful for family members as well, that this is what the illness might look like sometimes. And someone might look very well one day, and they might be able to maintain that wellness for an extended period of time. But at some point, that's going to drop off, and there's going to be an increased need for support and increased need for treatment. And so being aware of that consistently is something that I have found as a professional is very helpful and really is a way for family members to be able to cope a little bit better with the symptoms and with what their loved one is experiencing.
Well, and it's families and it's society, right, Lisa? Exactly. We talk about stereotypes with everything else.
We do. Mm-hmm. We do.
And there's stereotypes now, you know, when it comes to mental illness too. So, you know, when we see somebody and, you know, that phrase, oh, you know, they're crazy, or they're, you know, we all make our judgments, right?
Right.
But I think we need to be aware, and our listeners to be aware that, you know, maybe there's something going on with this person that needs attention.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, Teresa, you know, for all the years that you've been working with this population, and obviously without, you know, saying a specific name of a client, which I know you wouldn't, can you just give a brief vignette or one client that strikes you?
Sure. Oh, gosh, so many.
I know.
That's such a hard question. But, you know, there's one person in particular who comes to mind, who I met probably about 5 years ago at one of my case management programs. Very smart, very talented individual, actually is a published author, published a book of poetry, also a really great piano player who has actually played at some of the Connection events. And this individual, the way that he would describe his illness to me, the way that he would describe it when he was not on his medication, was that he was standing in the middle of a football field, and there were all these football players around him, and he would hear the voice of God. He would hear the voice of God, he would hear the voice of Jesus telling him to run one way, telling him to run another way, telling him to run for a touchdown. And just, he really has such a wonderful way to describe how his illness affects him when he's not in a good place. So when he's not taking his medication, when he's not engaged in treatment. And as I said, I've known this individual for the past 5 years, and I've seen him go up and down, and I've seen him struggle with symptoms. I've also just seen him complete his first semester in college, which was something for him that he had always strived to complete. made many, many attempts and wasn't able to complete it. So that, to me, is definitely one of the individuals who will always, always stick out in my mind as someone who was living with mental illness. And I use that phrase, and I use that phrase a lot, living with mental illness, because this is what the people in our services are doing. They are living with this illness. They're living every day. They're fighting it every day.
And, you know, you bring up a good point, too, because I'm going to go back to my friend's sister again. You know, the family has pretty much given up. They just don't know how to deal with it. They can't understand it, right? How can someone be so, you know, quote unquote normal, and then all of a sudden, you know, turn into this other person? And isn't it true? That's why you really need professionals to help deal with this stuff, because families sometimes just really can't believe it, or they're not educated enough about mental illness to know. So whether it comes with, you know, first of all, assessing the situation, what's going on, you know, where do you start, how do you treat these people, do they need meds, do they need, you know, just, you know, supervision with the meds that they should be taking, and maybe they've lost the ability for, you know, just their daily finances and those kinds of things. You know, for a lot of us, we take those skills and those, you know, day-to-day things for granted, but for somebody who's got, you know, some debilitating illness, it doesn't come that easy, right?
It doesn't, Anne. And I think really the first step that we would really help us start on the right track, or maybe get us on the better track of talking about mental health and wellness, is to talk about mental health and wellness the same way we talk about physical health and wellness. That's really got to be our first step, mm-hmm. as treatment providers, you know. And I know that that's what we do every day here at The Connection, and I know it is our mission to support the community, all of our community providers, not just the mental health providers, but the physical health providers, to have those conversations, to change the way that we are talking about mental health and addiction, and talk about it in the same way as what our physical health is. If I have an ache or a pain, I'm going to go to the doctor, mm-hmm. and I'm going to talk about that ache or a pain. What can we do to help resolve this? And we need to have those same conversations when we talk about mental illness.
You know, and you talk about educating people, and I just noticed something that you just did that, you know, as a former news reporter, I would get re-educated on issues from time to time, and you just re-educated me on a major issue. I don't know if you did it intentionally or not, but I keep calling this mental illness, mm-hmm. and you call it mental health and wellness. You know,
that's important. Yeah.
Isn't it important?
Yeah,
it's important, yeah. too, for people to understand that, you know, we're trying to change, and with the change and with the understanding comes the changing of vocabulary. And that's just as important, and that applies to the stereotypes and everything else. So I just want to say thank you for that. I'm now going to call it mental health and wellness. All right. That's good. So the other component here, you know, for people out there that are looking for resources, Teresa, and they're interested in whether it be the Cornerstone or the other programs that you have to offer, can you tell folks where they can go to get that information?
I can, and they can go right to our website, www.theconnectioninc.org. And they can choose our programs and locations and our behavioral health services, and they'll have a listing and description, brief description, with contact information for all of our programs. And they can also always call our helpline, which is 855-435-7955.
Exactly. And I think we're getting a lot of response from this program, which is great, and we've received emails and phone calls with folks looking for additional services. So we really urge folks out there, if you have a question or you're concerned about either yourself or a family member, please feel free to call. You know, everything will be kept confidential, and we will direct you to the service that you need. And once again, if in the event that we don't provide that specific service you're looking for, we're absolutely going to refer you to another agency in Connecticut that can help your needs. So I think the first step is always just that first phone call, or that first time that you reach out, is really key. And we're going to grab your hand, and we're going to lead you down the path and assist you and or your loved one to achieve wellness, as Teresa said.
And, you know, that's the other component here, is that what you just mentioned, Lisa, is that if for some reason The Connection doesn't have those services, it's really become, you know, a community of care, hasn't it?
Yes.
So there's other providers that you work with, you know, Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services and other programs out there, because, you know, one of the things that I see, and I've seen over over the course of the years is that people have their specialties.
They do.
And that's a good thing. These agencies aren't trying to be everything to everybody, but yet there's this collaborative effort that's really working well. So you're not competing against each other. You're helping each other out with the best intentions of you know, measurable impact on these people, regardless of what their issue is. And I think that's great.
You know, I'm really proud to be the CEO of The Connection, but in addition to that, I'm really proud to live in Connecticut and a state where there is such a diverse resource out there for folks that need services, irregardless of if it's for a child, you know, up to adulthood, etc. So again, you know, hats off to all my other partners out there, you know, in the state that are doing the same work that we're doing. It's difficult, and you know, we're really banding together and realizing that the state budget is tight and that funding will be cut. But I think we want to be a part of the solution and not the problem, and we need to coordinate services for everyone. So, again, it's not all about, you know, just about the connection. It's really about how together all these fabulous programs, agencies come together to serve those in need. So, folks, please reach out and give us a call. And, again, we will help you, www.theconnectioninc.org. You know, reach out and we'll see what we can do to get you on the right path.
Let me ask you another question, Teresa, because again, this is, you know, I'm the outsider here, just kind of you know, running the conversation. So I apologize if this might be a stupid question, but mental illness, when can or when does, you know, it impact someone's lives? Because, you know, Lisa just talked about, you know, children and youth. Are you seeing that as well? Is that part of your client base, young people?
That's a really great question. The behavioral health services at The Connection within this department, we do not serve children. However, mental health and the need for those conversations and needs to happen at a very young age. When we're seeing behaviors among children that seem odd or that seem different or really just don't seem to be associated with normal childhood and normal upbringing, signs and symptoms of mental illness can really pop up at very, very young ages. And I know that that's something that historically has been a little bit of a hot button issue. But, you know, throughout my career as a professional counselor, I've definitely seen more awareness becoming part of the mainstream with regard to pediatric care and mental health. And even with my own children, I'm always thinking, I know they're very young and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to diagnose them. I want to be their mother. But, you know, I'm always thinking about what their needs are and looking at their behavior and trying to understand, you know, if I'm not meeting their needs, are they experiencing some symptoms that might need some more support? So to answer your question in kind of a long-winded way, it can happen at any age.
You're absolutely
and that's,
right.
That's kind of challenging, but it's true.
So I agree with you. I think you bring up a good point. And I talk to the staff all the time because I think that we have a heightened awareness of really the things that are going on in Connecticut and through the clients we see and the children of the clients that we see. And I know that, you know, my staff and I have spoken, you know, great lengths about our own children and, you know, that we're always worried. I mean, because we see this every day. And so I think there's this heightened awareness that we're really in favor of getting your child or whoever to get treatment, right? Because we believe in it and we see that it works. And, you know, as hard as it is as a parent, irregardless of if you work with the population or not, it's not a sign that you're a failure. It's a sign that you care about your loved one irregardless and you're going to reach out and get them help. And, you know, I know I've had this conversation with even school moms about, you know, oh, they want to put my son on, you know, meds because he has, you know, he's over at, you know, whatever, he has some issue going on, and, you know, they'll ask me, what do you think? And I'm saying, yes, you need to do that. It's not the end. That doesn't mean you failed as a mom. It means there could be a chemical imbalance. There could be some trauma or something that happened. You know, get your child the help. Let's get this taken care of now and not avoid it, because you know what? It's not going to go away.
Right. That's good advice. Well, Teresa Ferraro, I want to thank you so much for shining the light on all the programs that you offer, and, you know, hats off to your compassion and you know, educating our listeners about, you know, what folks are dealing with. It's hard sometimes when you think, you know, you've got all these situations going on, but we never really know if we look into the eyes of somebody around us, you know, what they're going through or what they're dealing with or what their chemical makeup is. Or so, you know, I'm a note to myself, I need to be a little more tolerant too, because we just don't know. Everybody's got their demons. Everybody's got their stuff. So, you know, I just think it's great that we were able to shine some light on that. So if you're listening to this program and you want more information, the website again is The Connection Inc., all one word, theconnectioninc.org. And if they don't have the program that you or your loved one is in search of, they will refer you to one that is. So thank you again. And Lisa DeMattis-Lepore.
So
it's always nice seeing you in your bright pink today. I got to tell people, with her iced coffee in front of her, just in case you need a little bit of a description. But we really owe our thanks to our listeners, too, for tuning in to this edition of The Connection right here on WTIC News Talk 1080.